activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This Earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, February 6, 2014. Welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 95, temporarily living in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Dave. I'm only getting Skype stuff. Nelson. Okay. Joining me this evening, I know where this is going. From Wausau, Wisconsin, it's Brad, Peanut Butter Sandwich, Ludwig, and Anessa. Do you know the way to San Jose Moyens from Denton, Texas? Now, you got those from our pre-show conversation, Anessa, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I did.
I think we've sunk to a new low.
Trying to change things up a bit, and I was like, I don't know what I should use. And then you said the Skype thing, and I'm like, oh, I'll just type that in there.
It's a good thing I only said that, because it could have been worse, right?
I wouldn't have included worse. It's okay.
Okay. Well, thank God for that. All right. This is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the known or unknown universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science. And in real life, we divide the show into three areas: the news, the creature feature, and our spot. That's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien and our picks for the week. If you would like to watch us live, we record the show Thursdays a little bit earlier now. We're back. We knocked it back 2 hours, around 2 hours. We start around 6:30 p.m. Central Time live. We have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/GalacticNetcast or GalacticNetcast.com/live. How you guys doing, by the way? I didn't really ask.
Well, no, I don't want to tell you.
I'm doing okay.
I'm sorry.
I didn't fall today, so
woohoo!
What happened? Yeah. What?
Oh no, I said I didn't fall today. We ended up getting like a little bit of snow today, just enough to like dust everything. And I was like, I didn't fall, because when people walk a lot on the sidewalks, then it gets compacted down and turns into ice and gets kind of slick.
Yep.
I did fall on Monday though.
Did you break your butt bone?
No.
Or did you hurt your butt
bone? I bruised my knee bone.
Your knee bone? Okay. All right. Because your knee bone is connected to your butt bone in some way, in some fashion.
Through my femur?
Sure.
Hip bone?
I said in some way. It takes a while to get there, but they're connected.
Through your coccyx.
Hey, watch
that
language. Watch that language.
Oh, whoops.
All right. Let's start the show. And as always, it gets going with this.
In the news.
And it's me. I have the first story, and this is awesome. I've been looking forward to this movie for a long time. The Wachowski brothers. Or no, I shouldn't say Wachowski brothers, because there's a brother and a sister now. The Wachowskis are back.
Siblings.
Siblings. They are back with a brand new movie called Jupiter Ascending, and they just released the official trailer for it. I saw it the other day, and I watched it again today. And that thing looks pretty awesome. What do you guys think?
I need to rewatch the trailer, because I remember catching it at the theater the other day when I went to go see Her. So I need to give it another go to actually develop more of an opinion on it.
Have you seen it, Brad?
I saw the trailer a while back. I think we talked about it a while ago. It's Mila Kunis, so I might go see it.
Enough said? Is that what you wanted to say? Enough
no,
said?
No, she's okay. I don't know. It seemed like an interesting concept. I do want to see a couple more trailers before I make my final decision if I'm going to go see it in the theater.
It looks visually stunning, as do all their films. And it's a very interesting story. And basically, what I'm getting out of it is there's this there's these people in space. Well, not in space. They're from a planet, but they discover this Earth woman who was born with the stars aligning a certain way, and she's like, she's the possible next ruler of something. Hang on. I mean, I read the story. I just I'm trying to paraphrase, and as always, I'm terrible at paraphrasing. So the Warner Brothers film featuring Channing Tatum, and Mila Kunis plays a Russian-born immigrant who works as a janitor for a living, and her name is Jupiter, and she's about to get the biggest news of her life. The stars were pointing to an extraordinary event on the night she was born, and her DNA could mark her as the universe's next leader, says the character that's played by Channing Tatum. In his interview with MTV News earlier this year, Tatum spoke about the challenges that he had to go through in filming Jupiter Ascending. "It's crazy. It's a tough movie," the actor said. "We're trying to do stuff that's never been done before in three different aspects. They're trying to do CGI stuff that never been done before. They're doing stuff with cameras that's never been done before, and actual real live stuff that's never been done before, like stunts." And he said that he almost died, or this movie is going to kill me, or something like that. So I'm looking forward to, I mean, when actors and people involved in films hype it up that much and talk about that kind of thing, like I remember them talking about that as far as Gravity went. There was a lot of talk about how that film was groundbreaking in its filming techniques, and that turned out pretty awesome, right? So that's maybe a good sign, possibly, question mark. What do you guys think?
Possibly, or it could be a really big letdown.
Yes.
Like Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow.
Yeah. That was, although, you know what? I'm probably one of the few people that actually liked that movie in a weird way.
There are a bit, it has a soft spot in my heart because it does harken back to the old, you know, the serials back in the day. You know, like when we were back in our day, Dave, when we were kids, we'd watch Saturday at the Bijou on the public TV station, and they'd, you know, do the Flash Gordon serials and stuff like that. It kind of harkens back to that. So.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about Saturday at the Bijou. That was a that was a great series.
Yes, it was. It was amazing. We'd get our nickel popcorn and we'd enjoy the shows. You'd watch movies all day for a nickel.
The picture show. This movie comes out on July 18th, and you'd think when you first hear the title, Jupiter Ascending, you think it's actually about Jupiter, but it's the character played by Mila Kunis. Her name is Jupiter. Jupiter Jones. And I love names with the same letter, starting with the same letter.
You like alliteration?
Is that
alliteration.
Is that the word for it?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's move on to story number two. And who's got it? I'm not looking at the document.
That's me. Dave, what would life be like if aliens from Europa invaded Earth?
Wait a second. Okay, Europa is a moon of Jupiter. Another Jupiter connection, yeah. So the aliens live on Europa, which is not a planet; it's a moon.
It's a moon.
Is there an atmosphere on Europa?
No, but it is it's covered in a thick layer of ice.
So there could be some kind of life underneath the ice, possibly.
Yeah, with all the changes that have been going on the North Pole, or is it the South Pole, the Arctic or Antarctic? I can't remember, but they're finding, you know, different forms of life on Earth that we had no idea were there because of all the ice. So there's thought that Europa, because of the stresses that Jupiter puts on Europa, that the core of Europa could be warm enough to sustain some kind of life, that the whole thing isn't entirely a ball of ice.
So Jupiter probably, if there's any heat or whatever it would be that these organisms are living off of, would be some kind of thermoheat from the inside of the planet or inside of the moon, possibly?
Well, the gravity that's of Jupiter is kind of pushing and pulling Europa, not unlike it does for, you know, other planets. So that gravity, that stress, could be pulling and pushing on the core, causing molecules to rub together and keeping the core liquid, essentially.
Okay. Well, go
on. And I hope that for the people that can actually see the video can see that I'm trying to do some kind of hand gesture to imply said pushing and pulling, and I'm done now. Okay. But anyways, what we're talking about here is a weekly comic strip from Astrobiology Magazine that attempts to answer that question. The strip is titled The Abominable Snow Aliens of Europa. And the comic follows fictional adventures of real NASA scientist Kevin Hand during an exceedingly strange climate event on Earth. And the comic is now in its 9th week and is still going strong, and a new strip is released every Sunday. Astrobiologists are keen to peek through beneath Europa's crazy quilt patchwork ice, but missions to penetrate the ice and send a probe are decades away, Astrobiology Magazine representative said in an announcement. In the meantime, we can only dream about what, if any, strange creatures might be swimming in that alien sea. And, there is a couple of projects, I think, that are in the theoretical phase where they are looking at sending a probe that can actually drill 4 miles, or a probe system that can drill for miles through the crust of Europa and try to take a peek under the ice and see what's going on.
Very, very interesting.
True that.
Yep. Now, the comic is actually pretty cool. It's like 9 issues because they've, you know, I guess been doing once a week.
Yep.
Yeah. And so they're at their 9th week so far, and I just really love the idea that this comic is done in such a way where, like, the astrobiologists have this league, and they've got this secret meeting place, and they have, like, their own ships and, like, emergency telephone, and it's like a group of superheroes.
Well, shouldn't scientists be superheroes? I mean, come on.
But when you think of a scientist, though, you typically think of one that's in a lab coat in a lab.
I think Neil deGrasse Tyson, boom. He's a superhero.
So it just really depends on the science and the scientist. And so since astrobiology isn't something where you can fly up to Mars and grab a bunch of stuff and fly back and analyze, they're kind of stuck having to view everything. And since these aliens on Europa came down here, then it's like, oh, we can finally get called into action and get out of the lab sort of thing. So,
I have been corrected. Europa does have an atmosphere.
Who corrected you?
Anessa.
Oh.
Because she's awesome.
you're not saying that just
because
you guys
are. I may be biased
because
she is my girl.
But, yeah, you know, that has something to do with it, but I could see that.
A little bit.
I think she's awesome too.
Yay!
So,
I think y'all are both awesome.
Thank you.
Woohoo.
Who wrote this comic?
It's from Astrobiology Magazine, and it is being done by the stories by Leslie Mullen and A.L. Gonstrel, and the artwork is being done by A.L. Gonstrel.
Okay. Neat. This sounds really cool, especially putting, you know, scientists, astrobiologists in this kind of light, you know? Because in our society, most of the population does not value scientists. They value
sad but true
athletes. They value actors.
Tila Tequila,
yeah.
And her fake boobs.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Is she still around?
Tila, whatever.
I forgot she existed. I was like, is she still around?
Yeah, she was huge back in the MySpace days, right? That's how she got big, right?
That's how she got famous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's so weird to think about. That wasn't that long ago, really.
Back in the old days when MySpace was a thing.
Back less than 10 years ago.
Grandpa Brad, tell us about MySpace. Well, there was a time when there was a website called MySpace.
And it was shiny and blinky and...
Tila Tequila was really huge on the MySpace, and that's how she became popular, and our president.
God, let's hope that doesn't happen.
See, there you go. I just scared you and entertained you at the same time. Boom.
All right, and informed us. This was a great story. Thank you very much, Brad. Let's move on. Before we do, though, we need your feedback. We want your feedback. We value your feedback. Can I say anything other? Is there any other ways I could say that? We can
contact us and give us your opinions on the show. What is there something we should be covering more often? In one case, we were told that we kind of covered Doctor Who a little too much, so we throttled back on that. So, guidance is always welcomed.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really professionals at this. I mean, I had a career that was sort of like this. Brad is around people that do things in a way that are like podcasts. He's, you know, Anessa, her job isn't even close to this type of thing for, full-time job-ish. So, you know, we're not perfect. We need your feedback. And there's a couple of ways that you can provide that. You can call our voicemail number. That's 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Also email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. And going back to your point, Brad, of, we were heavy on the Who for a while. This show is very interesting because some weeks we're very heavy on the science, right?
It's true.
And then other weeks... we're heavy on the entertainment.
On the sci-fi.
Or some weeks we're heavy on the weird stories, you know, like the weekly world news story. So, you know, you're getting a variety of things. And if we're leading too much in one way, let us know. That's how you can give us feedback. Good point, Brad. Thank you for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Third and final story going to Miss Anessa.
If you're nasty. Janet Jackson reference. Okay.
I know.
Back in my day. Sorry.
I'm going to have that song in my head. But anyway, so we have all heard and read a lot about UFOs, unidentified flying objects, through books, movies, and news reports. However, our knowledge on this subject continues to be limited as the information about these flying objects is kept secret from the world. Nevertheless, the curious minds have collected boatloads of information.
No, go with buttloads. I like that.
I saw boatloads, and I'm like, buttloads. Oh, wait, this is boatloads.
And Ness has got a dirty mind.
So here are a few interesting facts about UFOs. Total in this list, there are 15 things, but I'm only going to list off 5. I figure people can check out the original article on Gizmodo and check out the rest for themselves. But I thought these were really interesting. So we have, for our first interesting fact, UFO is not the only term used to refer to these objects. The term unidentified aerial phenomenon, or UAP, is used as a broader term by investigators. Another term is OVNI, popularly used by Spanish, Portuguese, French, and Italian. Not entirely sure what OVNI stands for.
OVNI!
OVNI! Something else that I didn't know is that there is a law in the U.S. under Title 14, Section 1211 of the Code of Federal Regulations implemented on July 16th, 1969, which makes it illegal for U.S. citizens to have any contact with extraterrestrials or their vehicles.
It's illegal to be in cahoots or to, what's the other word I was looking for?
Cavort?
Cavort, thank you.
Yeah, you can't plan shenanigans with extraterrestrials and you can't get a hold of their vehicles.
Shenanigans!
No parties, no shenanigans, no meetings.
No parties, no shenanigans, no nothing.
No jackassery.
Jackassery. Nope. Great.
Yeah, I had no idea that that was actually a law.
This is a federal law, you said?
It's under the Code of Federal Regulations, implemented on July 16th, 1969.
Wow. I wonder if something happened to cause that to be a thing. Like
I'm thinking maybe like Roswell.
Or
69 is way far away.
I think they had some secret
meetings.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking maybe because it hung around long enough, they were like, okay, we need to do something about this.
Or maybe the secret meetings that followed the Roswell incident where the U.S. government and the aliens actually met, and then they had a disagreement, and they got pissed off at each other, and they decided to make this law. You're not going to be associating with those aliens ever. It's against the law.
Okay, so I quick did a search for Google for this, and Snopes popped up. Note that Title 14, Section 1211 did not make it illegal for U.S. citizens to have any contact with extraterrestrial or their vehicles. It simply required those who had such contact to submit to a quarantine at the request of the government.
Oh, okay, so you can have a party... You just got to wash yourself a lot afterwards.
Yes. If a spaceship full of little green men landed in your backyard, you would not have been in violation of the law and subject to a fine or imprisonment merely by shaking hands with the visitors or taking a tour of the spacecraft. You would only have been subject to those penalties if you refused to comply with a subsequent government quarantine order. Even then, the law only applied to NASA manned and unmanned space missions, so contact with extraterrestrials who are traveling through space on their own would not have fallen under the provisions of the law. The extraterrestrial exposure law was removed from the CFR in 1991.
Damn it.
NASA having determined that if it had served its purpose... had determined that it had served its purpose and was no longer in keeping with current policy... and is no longer in force.
I kind of wish that was still a thing, that was still a regulation or a law or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
All right. What else you got there, Anessa?
All right. Let's see.
Sorry to derail
flying
the show.
Flying saucers.
No, thank you, Brad.
Flying Saucers from Outer Space was the first book to use the term UFO. The book was written by Donald E. Kehoe in 1953.
So I thought the flying saucer thing was from that first really big sighting by that pilot over like Washington State or something like that. I thought that was the first use of flying saucer.
Hmm.
Well, this is saying it's the first book to use the term UFO.
Oh, first book. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yes. Okay. So Flying Saucers from Outer Space is the name of the book. Flying Saucers from Outer Space was the first book to use the term UFO.
All right.
So Area 51's nickname Dreamland was allegedly derived from an Edgar Allan Poe poem by the same name. It admonishes that the traveler traveling through it may not dare not openly view it. Never its mysteries are exposed to the weak human eye unclosed.
Neat.
Dun, dun, dun.
I like that. You know what? Art Bell used to have a Sunday night show along with Coast to Coast AM called Dreamland. And it solely focused on like UFOs and weird phenomenon.
Hmm. Interesting.
Phenomenon.
Get out of phenomenon. My head. I was just thinking that, but I had a mouthful of Diet Pepsi, so I couldn't sing it.
Dave beat you to it.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
You snooze, you lose, Brad.
That's true.
So
that's what I get for swallowing.
That's what she said.
What? No. Okay, stop. Stop that. Stop that. Behave, people. Okay. Final one.
You know, it's been a long since I've done that. Thank you very much. That's what she said. And I couldn't just ignore that.
No, that one was too hard to resist. Definitely, I agree.
I lobbed the softball. I apologize.
But I had to nip it in the bud before it got out of hand. So
cut it out.
Okay, Anessa.
All right, and the last fact that I'm going to mention is the first photographs of a UFO were taken in 1883 by astronomer Jose Bonilla in Zacatecas, Mexico. So.
Really? I'd love to see that. Is that photograph on this article? Or in this article?
I don't recall.
Because I want to see that picture.
That'd be really awesome.
Yeah, it would. I'm looking real quick here. I don't think so. Nope, not in there. Okay.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing a photo.
I'm going to Google his name real quick just to see what happens. Yeah, this is great for radio.
I see
porn sites. Just kidding. Well, there it is.
Oh, I found it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Looks like
That's
a spider.
Crazy.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like, kind of like a spider sprawled out.
Looks and, like I mean, he got a bug on his telescope.
I mean, there's spiders in Zacatecas, so it's not.
Yeah, I forgot to brush the telescope off before he started looking.
I kind of wondered if.
All right, way to go. Good job, Anessa. Great. If you want to check out all 15 of these, check out the link that we'll have in the show notes of the podcast. And you can also get it at our website, galacticnetcasts.com. Before we move on, any final thoughts on these stories? Anything you guys want to add?
Clean your telescope off before you take a picture.
I was going to say the state of Zacatecas looks like a guy like hunched over with a hat. It's random, but like if you're in Mexico and you drive from state to state, they have, when you enter the state, it's got a map of the state on the sign that's welcome you to whatever state you're driving into. And it looks like a guy with a hat, like hunched over, like maybe he's dancing or something.
Well, maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe there was a guy at one time. Maybe this is a very revered man, you know, in the history of the state.
I don't know. It just happens to be the state where my grandmother lives. So.
Oh, cool. That's neat. All right. Awesome. Okay. We've got our creature feature coming up. But first, want to thank our sponsor, Audible.com. And, of course, Audible is the perfect way for you to ingest books without actually using your eyes. Use your ears instead. And to get you to try their service, they are offering a 30-day trial and one free audiobook for you to check out. And in going with the theme of this podcast, may we suggest the following book. It's called Fast Walker, a novel. And here's the brief synopsis. General Bushnell of the Bushnell Bean Company. No, maybe not. I don't know. Head of the top secret government agency. How do you pronounce that? You guys reading this? Alintel.
I would say Alintel.
Alintel. He is
not to be confused with Allentown.
Yeah, because it often is.
Absolutely.
Anyways, General Bushnell is willing to use any means necessary to get his own flying saucer. Peter Keller eagerly follows every lead in hopes of solving the mystery of UFOs. Meanwhile, alien abductee Rachel Rand simply seeks the truth. But the one man who has some answers is a faceless mastermind known as Vulcan.
Dun, dun, dun.
So check it out. Fast Walker, a novel on audible.com. You can get it for free. And here's what you do. Go to audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, that's audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, we thank them for their support of the Alien Invasion podcast. All right, here we go.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
And this is a famous alien in the history of aliens. Could be one from a movie. Could be an alien that someone supposedly saw or was abducted by or witnessed. So what do you got for us this week, Anessa?
Well, I actually decided that since I covered the green Martians the last time I had a creature feature, that I would cover the red Martians, which are the other dominant Martians on Mars. So this is basically from A Princess of Mars. They're not quite as interesting as the green Martians, in my opinion, but still pretty interesting. The red Martians are basically a mixture of races on Mars. One of the races is extinct. They're fair-skinned, and they were seafaring, and when the oceans dried up, they kind of died out. The other race that they're mixed with are called Firstborn, and they're the oldest of the humanoid races on Mars, and they live near the South Pole. And then they are also mixed with Okar, which they live in the freezing north. So, and just years of breeding and whatnot, they've essentially ended up with like this copperish tone to their skin and dark hair.
Okay, before you continue, Anessa, for those that don't know what you're talking about as far as Princess of Mars, can you do a little background on that?
Sure. A Princess of Mars is the first in a series of books that are written by Edgar Rice Burroughs. And the first book is about this Civil War soldier who ends up falling asleep in the desert in a cave and wakes up and he's on Mars. And his name is John Carter. And he essentially gets captured, but at the same time that he's captured, he ends up having to battle these green Martians and moves up in the ranks. And he ends up falling for Deja Thoris, who is the princess on Mars, or of Mars. And so he ends up becoming like the hero and saves the day, essentially, in this book. But there's a whole series of these books. I think there's 11, and I believe they're the Barsoom Chronicles or something. I forget. But Mars, according to them, is called Barsoom. So,
and
that's the book. And there's a couple of... I'm sorry, what?
And these aliens were introduced in Princess of Mars, right?
Yes. Okay. These are the two aliens that are like most popular, or at least dominant, in this particular book, Princess of Mars. I don't know further on down the series. There are other species that are introduced, but they're mainly species that you use for food or protection or to ride around on. So not a whole lot of other descriptions on the alien races on Mars at this point besides the red Martians and the green Martians.
Okay.
So I figured I would cover the two major ones before I moved on to something else. So if anyone's thinking like, oh God, she's going to talk about all these alien races from this book, she needs to keep moving on.
No, we'll just move on to another book and then we'll cover the aliens in that book.
I'll cover all the aliens in that book. So it'll be awesome.
So what else about these guys?
Okay. Like all other Martians, the red Martians lay eggs. So even though they look like us, they lay eggs. An egg has to be incubated for about 5 Martian years before hatching. And upon hatching, the young red Martians are fully developed except for their size, much like the green Martians. And they reach maturity in another 5 Martian years. Like the other Martian races, which, much like the green, they wear very little clothing, but a lot of ornaments. body and facial hair was practically unknown and considered unusual. And with the red Martian people spread out over the face of Barsoom, or Mars, red Martian culture is far more diverse than the largely homogenized cultures of the other races. So they're much more diverse than the green Martians. The green Martians basically just had their little tribes in a particular area and would fight each other. So it wasn't too horribly diverse. And traditionally, most red Martians worshipped the goddess Isis. And when the individual reached the age of 1,000 years, because Martians lived for a really, really long time, or when they grew tired of living, they would make a pilgrimage to the Valley Dor near the southern pole of Barsoom. The valley was long believed to be the entrance to a glorious, idyllic afterlife. These beliefs have been drummed into them by the Therns, which I'm not entirely sure who they are because they hadn't really come out in the first book yet. But in truth, the valley, while abundant with life, was overrun with predatory white apes and plant men. The few who survived those beasts ended up becoming enslaved by the Therns until they grew too weak to serve, at which point they were killed and consumed.
Plant men. So. Plant men sounds like something, like a really bad movie from the 1950s or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, like, these books were written, oh gosh, I don't remember, 1911 was the first book? So, early 1900s. And, but yeah, they talked about the white apes in the book, but we hadn't quite gotten to the plant, or the plant men, which I think would be kind of entertaining. So
plant
maybe
men.
I'll have to keep reading just to find out more about these plant men.
I think we should keep on reading and have the plant men as a future creature feature.
Yeah.
Plant men.
The plant men. Yeah, because the white apes just sound like they're really vicious, and even the green Martians are kind of scared of the white apes, so
wow,
they tend to stay away.
They must be some badasses then. Holy cow.
I know. Because they're like, oh, white apes are over there, so we don't really go over there.
Yeah, because the green Martians are pretty bad A's themselves. I mean, all they do is fight.
They are. They're pretty tough and rugged, and they'll just fight each other and kill each other off and move up in the ranks, because that's basically how you move up in life, is killing somebody else off. And they find pleasure from pain and death.
Wait a second. I think I remember seeing the white ape in the John Carter movie. I believe so,
but it's been a really long time since I've seen it, and I've only seen it once. So okay. I may have to go back and rewatch it one of these days.
Yeah, you can compare the books that you've been reading to the movie.
I own the movie in Blu-ray.
Sweet.
Wow. Okay.
I can totally watch it when I go up there then.
Yes,
Yay.
You can.
All right.
Sweet.
Dave sounds so genuinely excited. Yay!
He's like, awesome. So yeah, those are the red Martians.
Those reds, so. Stupid reds. All right.
The reds. You got the reds and the greens. It's very Christmassy.
You know, I would love to learn more about Edgar Rice Burroughs. He seems like a really cool cat. Like, he seems very imaginative for the time that he wrote this. I mean, some pretty big concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Most people were worried about, you know, their horse dying in the early 1900s, you know?
I know, that's what I was worried about. Wait, what?
Back in my day.
I think you're setting a record for old man voice tonight there, Brad.
He had the pince-nez on earlier.
Oh, I missed that. I missed that.
Back in my day, this is what you wore if you wanted to see things.
Okay. You can go in your little corner, Brad, and do your old man's voice.
All right.
No, I like it. I'm just saying that I think that we should move on. Cause
I think we should, too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, everybody that's listening, don't forget to check out our new podcast called the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, premiering tonight live on this as we stream the shows live. You can also check it out at galacticnetcasts.com. That is coming up after we get done recording the alien invasion tonight. Looking forward to it. You guys excited?
Woohoo!
Yes.
Okay. All right. But we have to finish this podcast first. And before we do that, we want to thank our second sponsor, Stitcher Smart Radio. You can listen to all of our shows, including, hopefully, if we get approved, the Sci-Fi Geeks Club as well at Stitcher Smart Radio. It's an app that you install on your device, be it a smartphone or any other, you know, computational device. Computational device.
Your computational device.
I don't know where that came from.
Tell us about this newfangled computational device, Dave.
It adds and subtracts numbers.
What?
An abacus?
Yeah. Okay. Android phone, iPhone, BlackBerry, you name it, the Nook, any device that is smart, you can put that Stitcher app on. You can also get extensions to your browsers like a Firefox or a Chrome browser as well. You can listen to Stitcher shows on. And the great thing about Stitcher, and I know this is a feature on other like, podcast player app type deals, is where you can start it on one thing and or start it and then stop it on one thing and then pick it up on someplace else, on something else. Oop. Like you're listening to one show on your phone, you know, maybe you're working out. And then you want to stop and get cleaned up and continue it. When you get back to the office, you can do that with Stitcher, Stitcher Smart Radio, the Stitcher app. So what you do is go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts, enter the promo code galacticnetcasts. See, if you're wondering what a promo code is, that tells Stitcher that we are sending people their way. And we get a small stipend for it. Stitcher.
Stipend.
Stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts and enter the promo code galacticnetcasts if you're going to sign up. If you're already a member, great. Good on you. But if you want to try it for the first time, go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts and enter the promo code galacticnetcasts. Okay, boys and girls, are you ready for picks?
Yay!
I'm at 199 hours and 49 minutes on my Stitcher.
Well, good for you.
Miss. I have more than you.
You have more than me now?
I do.
When
oh, no. Probably not after today. I haven't listened to it today.
No.
Not much, anyway. 200 hours, 48 minutes.
Wow. I have been not listening to it as much just because I'm not in situations where I can listen to Stitcher as much. I've had a lot of other stuff going on, so I will be getting back to it soon. I love Stitcher. It's a great way to consume shows, and I recommend it for everybody else as well. Okay, picks time. Let's recommend some other stuff here. I found, very much like Brad, who proclaimed this to us in the pre-show, that he did not have a pick. I forgot about a pick until today as well. And luckily, I remembered earlier this afternoon, so I had time to find one. And my pick is a video I found on YouTube of KGB film footage of gray aliens. And not sure if this is real or faked, but it looks pretty cool. Looks very convincing. In 2011, videos were released onto YouTube of footage that was claimed to be of the KGB filming between 1942 and 1969. So basically, it was just kind of documenting their relationship with the gray aliens, the Zeta Reticuli aliens known as the Grays. They're the ones with the big almond-shaped eyes, large heads, skinny bodies, those. And these videos look pretty real. I mean, There's a close up of one of the aliens and the way his head moved, like the skin and the muscle on the top of his head moved independently from other parts of his. If it is some kind of computer generated thing, it's really, really good CG, I have to say. And they made it look, if it is fake, they made it look really old, like it is actual film footage. Like, at one point, they show the KGB logo, And there's one where I think they first discover the aliens. It's footage from an airplane, and they're following the flying saucers. And then after that, the next footage they show is crashed UFOs, and there's some bodies laying there, and a couple of aliens are still awake. And then later on, there's what looks like some kind of interview in a room with the aliens. And then the final part they show is some kind of meeting that they had out in someplace out in the country. Like, it seemed to me like the aliens took up residence on our world and were living in Russia, and the humans were going out to meet them, and this is kind of where they lived and hung out. So we'll put the link in the show notes. You can check out the video for yourself and tell us if you think it's real or looks fake. There's a message board where I got this video from, and a lot of people were convinced that it wasn't real just because of the KGB logo itself, how it wasn't exactly, it didn't exactly look the way it looked in the time period that it was supposed to be. And then somebody else pointed out that it was the same KGB logo that was on some footage that was already proved to be fake. So check it out for yourself, and you be the judge of this supposed KGB film footage of gray aliens.
Ooh.
And that's my recommendation. We'll have it.
Maybe they want you to think that it's fake.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. It looks really genuine to me. I mean, it looks like stuff that would be filmed like from 1942 to 1969. It really does. Brad, are you watching it?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Creepy?
Yeah, it does look very creepy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, you know, it's creepy for a reason, because we've always seen these gray aliens, just pictures of them, or artists' interpretation of what they might look like. But to actually see them move around, it's freaky as hell. So if you, dear listener, want to check it out for yourself, we will have the link in the show notes of the podcast. All right, Brad.
Sweet.
Mr. Didn't Have a Pick Until the Very Last Minute. Did you find one?
Sure.
Okay. What'd you get?
Oh, I need to actually tell you about it.
Yes.
Oh.
This is how it works.
Well, I decided to actually read the strips for the... the thing I just talked to you
about. The astrobiologists?
Yes, the abominable snow aliens of Europa.
So you're incorporating a news story, something from a news story into a pick.
Yes.
It's part two.
Yes, I am.
Part two of the story.
And here is what some of the artwork looks like. And this is so horrible for podcast audio.
But go ahead. You're really good at explaining this kind of thing. So paint a picture for us, Brad.
Yeah, it's almost like, looking at the art style, like it is drawn and done with a totally on computer. And then it is definitely colored after the fact. Not a very professional program is being used. It's being done somewhat simplistically.
You can really tell
that.
That
said,
you can tell that by looking at it.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
I use Photoshop a lot.
Ah.
Or at least if he's using Photoshop, he's not used to using the program. But anyway, as horrible as I just made that sound, I don't think the emphasis so much is on the artwork as how interesting the setup here is. Very fascinating. And if you are looking at the video, you can actually see that they do some of this stuff in GIF form, because on the far left of this particular panel, it is actually animated.
Yeah, it looks like it's. It looks like a TV screen of some kind.
So it's flickering, and the information is you know flashing across another screen. So they're you know trying to keep it interesting, keeping it dynamic, and the setup and the main character that we're following, Kevin Hand, almost seems like an Indiana Jones.
Mr. Hand, sorry.
In that, you know, he's calling all the astrobiologists together and that they need to go to, I believe it's the Arctic island. Yeah, they're in the Arctic where they're meeting up. Excuse me. Or this underground, under ice facility, which is clandestine, but this has all been kind of thought out ahead of time that there could be something that would come to Earth that astrobiologists would have to come together to save mankind. And that's really what this seems to be all about.
Astrobiologists, assemble!
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they're gathering all this information and they're getting video from the International Space Station to see what's happening outside the Earth to get that view and pulling everything all together.
Do they show the actual creatures from Europa?
No, at this point we've only seen the spacecraft, which, here we go. It's a saucer. It's got some ice on it. And at one point they're like, oh, that matches the icy crust of Jupiter's moon Europa. So that's how they know that these aliens are from Europa.
It looks pretty, I mean, I'm no comic expert, but it looks pretty decent. And I know you said it wasn't exactly up to par with.
Well, no, it's simplistic in its art style, and that's not, I'm not saying that to be derogatory. I'm saying that it is not. I would argue that Frank Miller, author of Sin City and other things, his art style is simplistic. It's specifically designed to focus more on imparting to you key things graphically, but the story, the focus is more on the words, on the story. And I think that's more of what's happening here. Am I equating this art style to Frank Miller? No. But the spirit of the thing, I think, is somewhat similar.
Okay.
So.
Looks good.
Yeah. It's very interesting, and I will be bookmarking this and reading it along with my other huge list of webcomics that I already read.
Now,
so.
Do you think that the age of the internet and webcomics has really helped or hurt the genre, not the genre, but the comic industry or comic, what's a good word that we could use in this case? Do you know what I'm getting at here?
Do I think that what webcomics have hurt the comic book industry?
No. Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing for comics in general, webcomics?
I don't think it harms or helps either way.
Okay.
I think it's an interesting, it's a cool medium in that if you don't have to go through the rigmarole of getting an agent, you don't have to go through the rigmarole of, you know, trying to, you know, submit stuff to Marvel or DC or whomever to, you know, try to get them to publish you. You can work on it on your own, develop your own style. You know, one of my favorite webcomics, Questionable Content, which is, it's just a provocative name. It's about a group of friends. But it's, you can see back, you can go into the archive and see years back of where the artist started to where they're at now. And it's just kind of an interesting progression of this very simplistic style to a more complex form of drawing of the characters now. So I think it's a great way for artists to work on their style, to work on something on a regular basis and be able to look at progression and be able to look at finding ways to improve their art. I don't think it's bad at all. I think it's a great way for people to get exposure that wouldn't normally get it.
It's like anything that is created for or on the internet.
It's like what we're doing. Yeah. There's no way in God's green earth that I would ever get on the radio because I have a wretched voice.
Or 10 or less years ago, people that were trying to do what we're doing, it would be a lot harder for them. They'd have smaller audiences. Their production mm-hmm. value wouldn't be nearly as good. You know, we're thanks to Google, we can all get together on the internet and record video automatically. I record audio on my end. I mean, we produce 2 hours of radio every week that's very specific to a certain audience. That's something that wouldn't have been able to do, or people wouldn't have been able to do as easily before the internet.
Oh, absolutely.
Writers wouldn't have the audiences before the internet. People that wouldn't write or wouldn't have written before the internet, you know, written fiction or nonfiction.
And there have been cases where I know that there was a webcomic I was following called Kukubri, which was done by a gentleman named Ramon Perez, and he actually ended up, through his webcomic, just a phenomenal artist, he ended up getting discovered, and he's actually working on comics now. So it can go that way as well.
And I'm thinking the XCDC. What's that comic?
Oh, XKCD.
Yeah, I'm guessing that they make a lot of money because they're like the number one web comic, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, and it's stick figures. So I mean, it's all about the jokes, the storyline. Well, you know, there's sort of a cohesive sort of a thing kind of going. Oh, wait, am I mixing up my? No, XKCD is the stick figures, right?
Yeah.
No.
It's not?
XKCD has a lot of science-themed.
Yeah. Posts. But they're stick figures, though, aren't they?
They're not, like, super rudimentary stick figures.
Well, they're not, like, super elaborate people, but they're not quite stick figures, I believe. Maybe I'm thinking of, like, Saturday morning breakfast comic.
Yeah, Saturday morning, but yeah, like, here is...
I might be thinking about like that one.
Yeah, here's XKCD that we're talking about. It's stick figures, but the jokes are in.
That's right. Okay.
They definitely promote science, and some of my favorite science based, you know, math based jokes come from XKCD. It's a great comic.
It's
book.
So simple.
Comic
it's,
series.
It's simple and brilliant. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely the focus is on the dialogue. And not the art.
Isn't it interesting how our conversations, where they end up? It's like,
yeah.
Aliens.
Oh, here's XKCD.
Yeah, we're a podcast about aliens.
Wait,
but
what?
It goes off to so many other interesting areas. I love it about our podcast. I love that part of our podcasts, you know. All right. Thank you, Brad. Great pick. Let's round it out and finish this show up with Anessa's pick.
My pick is a movie called The Forgotten. And it was funny because when I was reading the description of this movie, I couldn't remember if I had seen it before. And then I realized I was thinking about Flight Plan. And I was like, oh, so I haven't seen this movie before. So, The Forgotten stars Julianne Moore and Gary Sinise and a bunch of other people. And Julianne Moore plays this character named Telly Peretta. And she is a grieving mother, and she's been going to Gary Sinise because Gary Sinise is a psychiatrist in this particular movie. And he's there to help her cope with the loss of her 9-year-old son. And at some point during all of these therapy sessions and stuff, she finds out that apparently, like, she's had this, well, they tell her that she's basically made up this son. She was pregnant, she had a miscarriage, she lost the child, and they're telling her that she's imagined, like, 9 years with this kid.
Wow.
And so she's having to cope with this, and she's like, there's no way that I made this up. Like, he's real, and I know he's real. And so she ends up running into a familiar face. It was a guy who has a daughter, or who had a daughter. And she walked up to him, and, you know, she asked him if he remembered her, and he's like, no. And he's like, yeah, you had a daughter named Laura. And he's like, I've never had a daughter. And so she ends up, like, trying to get him to say his daughter's name. And she was trying to remember, like, where her – because she ended up going up to, like, the guy's apartment and talking to him and stuff. And the guy's drunk and passes out. And so she goes into his office and sees, like, a little piece of wallpaper torn. And so she goes and starts ripping off the wallpaper and finds these walls that were painted on by the daughter. It used to be the daughter's room.
Oh, my God.
And the guy has no recollection that he had a daughter. And he sees this, and of course it triggers something in his memory. And so there's two people running around that have lost their kids, supposedly in a plane crash. But they're the only ones who remember that these kids exist.
I know where this is going.
And because I'm talking about it on the Alien Invasion, aliens are involved.
Yay! You know what? They do a really good job in promoting this film of not revealing that, because I had no idea that there was aliens involved in this movie.
Yeah, I didn't either, and I was just kind of browsing Netflix, and it had it listed under alien sci-fi, and...
Oh, way to go, Netflix. Way to spoil it.
Way to spoil the movie. But yeah, it was like alien sci-fi, and I'm like, I didn't think The Forgotten had aliens in it, like, by reading the descriptions and stuff. And so I started watching it, and I'm like, oh, okay, I know how this is gonna go. Although I'm kind of thinking that because they went the route of aliens, a lot of people probably didn't like that, because they only gave it like 5.8 stars or something on IMDb. I don't remember. But it wasn't a bad movie. It wasn't awesome, but I didn't want to, like, rip my eyes out or anything, so.
Julianne,
I say give it a watch if you're bored. It's like an hour and a half long, so it's not too horribly painful.
Julianne Moore, I like her a lot. Although I didn't like her when she replaced Jodie Foster in the Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, the Hannibal?
Series.
Yeah. Yeah, Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. But no, I like Julianne Moore, and, she does a really good job with trying to convince people that she's not crazy. And although it was kind of weird at first watching the movie, because the last time I saw Julianne Moore in anything, it was 30 Rock.
Oh.
And in 30 Rock, she had like a really exaggerated Boston accent.
That's
and
right.
She started talking, and I'm like, where's this cheesy accent?
Totally forgot about that. That's awesome.
Yeah, so, but beyond that, yeah. So yeah, there's aliens, and you end up, spoiler alert, it's basically aliens.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
But it's
yeah,
aliens.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, my hair won't stay out.
Okay, so we'll have the link to that on the Pix page at galacticnetcasts.com. And yeah, check it out, The Forgotten. We also talked about the KGB film footage of the gray aliens and Brad's pick. What's it called again?
The Abominable Snow Aliens of Europa. Hang on.
That's, you know, that's prime for some kind of like cheesy made to look like 1950s movie. You know, it's perfect for that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got that title.
Yeah. It's got that vibe.
We should work on that.
Yes. That's the next project.
And then
Galactic
we can be
Netcast.
Listed with the whatever the skull of Cadavera or whatever. The film that's made to look like cheesy 50s.
You know what?
Movie.
Actually, that would make a good like audio play. Like a radio play, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
with the Foley work, you know, stomping on sand to make it sound like you're walking and all, you know, thunder with the piece of metal, you know, and that kind of thing.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
some celery for breaking stuff.
Yeah, a lot of work, but it would be fun. A
couple of pencils.
You know, Foley artist, not really in demand anymore. You know, I wouldn't make a career out of being a Foley artist.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah. All right, that is going to do it for this alien invasion. Feedback, again, let us know, 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966, or galacticnetcasts.com. You can subscribe by going to galacticnetcasts.com/subscribe. I did change some things around on the website, so we made that a lot easier for you. galacticnetcasts.com/subscribe. And that's going to do it. Don't forget to subscribe also to the brand new podcast, the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, which we're about to record the first episode. I'm very excited. And yeah, hope you check that out as well. Final thoughts, guys.
Always make sure to have a pick before you start a show.
Good advice for not only podcasting, but for life itself.
Yes.
Yep.
It's basically be prepared.
See, the Boy Scouts knew what was going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Be prepared.
Yep.
I just came across an article that has the headline that Ice-T recorded an audiobook for Dungeons & Dragons by mistake.
Oh, that was by mistake. I didn't read. I saw
the
headline.
That was by mistake. Like, he didn't know about it till he got there. And so he decided to get through it. And apparently he did an interview with Kotaku, and they have, like, a list of his quotes. And he was like, pardon my language here, I'm just quoting, but motherfuckers talk like Yoda. This finish is impossible to me. And Pegasi, that's horses with wings. This dish is crazy.
That is
I'm
funny.
Like, that's awesome. I have to listen to that podcast where he talks about how he came about recording this audiobook. And once it gets released, I have to listen to it.
Yeah. a fantasy book read by Ice-T. I am so there.
The only thing.
So there.
That almost is like Samuel L. Jackson doing that Christmas story, or that Shut Up and Go to Bed story, or whatever it was called.
Oh, yeah. It was, yeah. That was really awesome.
Yeah.
So I know it's not going to be quite like that, but I still want to hear him read it.
Yes. So that's your final thought, Anessa?
That's my final thought. I want to listen to Ice-T read a book about Dungeons & Dragons.
All right.
And he also manages to segue that into a commentary about today's music, which I thought was beautiful.
Did you listen to the podcast?
No, but I read the article earlier today somewhere else.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. And we are out of here. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Woohoo!
All right, bye!
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.